Hi everyone, I'm Nora Timmermans. First of all, I want to thank Ronnie and Kathleen for giving me the opportunity to quench my thirst for collective reflection. I am a lawyer by training. I practiced law for a number of years, then decided that I didn't like it all too much, went back to university to study philosophy, did a PhD in philosophy, and then unfortunately had to learn that also the academic world is a pretty competitive environment where there is little place for someone, I would say, like me, who started their academic career at a later stage in their life, having to combine it with family mostly. So after my PhD, I had to move outside the system, and today I work as a policy officer for the Royal Academy of Science and Arts in Brussels since October last year, basically, so 6 months or something. And I really do very heavily miss my research and my my philosophical reflections, so I'm really, really thankful for this opportunity. That's more than enough about me. Let's talk about Benjamin Constant. I will talk about something that maybe seems only indirectly related to the theme of this Congress on ownership and governance of arts and water. I will talk today about ownership or property as a condition for exercising political power. And I am very curious to learn to what extent Constant's conception of political power and the way property functions within it aligns with or diverges from conceptions of participation in different governance structures. So my hypothesis, and it's kind of a bold hypothesis, I guess, is that Constant's conception, if we take it as an example of a liberal democratic conception of political power, and I will explain what that means in a bit. So it's not necessarily Constant's conception as his personal conception, but I take him more as a representative of a broader theoretical strand, let's say. So my hypothesis is that Constant's conception of political power can actually serve as a model for how governance is usually conceptualized today. So to put it a bit more pointy, my hypothesis is that a historically specific 19th century understanding of property and power is still today an unsurpassable horizon for thinking about participation in governance. And I think the reason why this is the case is to be found in that theory or that model or that conception itself. So now I'm moving back to the 19th century, the 18th century even, because Constant was actually born in 1767 in Lausanne in Switzerland, but he moved to Paris at the age of 30 and he became a well-known public figure. He was active as a philosopher, a journalist, a writer. He has this beautiful little novel, Adolphe, which I recommend everyone to read. It's way better than his political writings. So he was a philosopher, a journalist, a writer, and a politician in the post-revolutionary scene in France, say between 1795 and 1830, when he died. And Constant is, in the philosophical literature at least, known as one of the historical examples of liberalism, of liberal thinkers on the continent. So liberalism is often thought of as a distinctively Anglo-Saxon way of thinking, but Constant was very explicitly considered to side with Adam Smith, John Locke, John Stuart Mill, in whose footsteps more contemporary liberal thinkers such as Isaiah Berlin and John Rawls are usually situated. And the reason why this is the case is most evident in his also most famous discourse or lecture that he delivered to the Athénée Royal in 1819, which is entitled On the Liberty of the Ancients Compared with That of the Moderns, in which he made, as the title does no effort to conceal, a sociological and conceptual distinction between ancient and modern liberty. Basically, that conceptual distinction comes down to the following. Ancient liberty is political liberty. I have a quote from Constant here, where he says, among the ancients, the individual, almost always sovereign in public affairs, was a slave in all his private relations. As a citizen, he decided on peace and war. As a private individual, he was constrained, watched, and repressed in all his movements. As a member of the collective body, he interrogated, dismissed, condemned, beggared, exiled, or sentenced to death his magistrates and superiors. As a subject of the collective body, he could himself be deprived of his status, stripped of his privileges, banished, put to death by the discretionary will of the whole to which he belonged. So the idea was that for ancient liberty is political liberty and no individual liberty. Modern liberty is, not surprisingly, exactly the opposite. It is individual liberty and very little extension of political liberty. Among the moderns, I quote Constant again, among the moderns, on the contrary, the individual, independent in his private life, is, even in the freest of states, sovereign only in appearance. So for the first 150 years after Constant died, there was no doubt about which side of the divide he was on. Constant was a thinker of modern liberty. He was understood as supporting maximal individual freedom and, conversely, minimal interference from the state. As a result, he was presumed to be not very interested in political power because he thought that it was something that was altogether dangerous. Whether it is exercised by the government or by the people, from above, from below, it made no difference. Political power is a threat to individual freedom, according to a liberal reading of Constant, at least. But in the early 1980s, an important anti-totalitarian current in Western philosophy came about, not only the other side of the water, but also very much on the continent, and it vouched for a new appreciation of liberal thought, and that reappreciation required a rethinking and deepening of its philosophical presumptions. As a serious political philosopher, one could no longer plausibly call oneself progressive and at the same time argue against democracy, against political power. So a current came about where individual freedom and political power had to be combined in one comprehensive theory. And the interpretation of Constant in the secondary literature followed a very similar shift. So Constant was, starting from the 1980s, no longer read as someone who disliked political power, as a liberal, but rather as someone who successfully knew how to combine individual freedom and popular power. He was read as a liberal democrat. And this is the perspective where I got interested in Constant, because my intuition was that if Constant's theory of liberalism can so easily be read as a theory of liberal democracy, then maybe Constant's theory holds the key to understanding what is liberal about democracy and what is democratic about liberalism. So to have access to this key is so interesting from the perspective of a political philosopher, because today liberal democracy is both in the broader public debate as well as in the more sophisticated philosophical literature presented and accepted as the unsurpassable horizon of political societies. The unsurpassable horizon of living together, even. So it wouldn't be exactly accurate to say that this was the start of my research, because it already took me quite a long time to get there. But let's say that was the point where I had found my research question. Because Constant was so often, but only as of the 1980s, invoked as a successful defender of liberal democracy, I got interested in how Constant defined and understood political power. And it will not surprise you, given the theme of this Congress, that property is at the heart of Constant's answer. So allow me to explain, but also allow me to not take the very short and direct route into it, because then it will be less interesting. So first I have to explain a distinction that I found in Constant, not only in Constant, it's something I just take Constant as a representative of a broader philosophical way of thinking. In Constant's political philosophy, there is a distinction between political power and governmental power. And political power is the institutionalized possibility to legitimize governmental power. To be more precise, governmental power can only be considered to be legitimate if there is an institutional possibility to express or withdraw one's assent with regard to the exercise of governmental power. To put it more simple, governmental power is rule, political power is political participation. And the one, they always go together. The one is, you cannot have legitimate rule without a form of political participation, according to Constant. This is an important distinction, because in accounts of democracy that are not accounts of liberal democracy, governmental power and political power are very often confounded. So it's an interesting distinction, and also theoretically the way that Constant develops it is more interesting, but not interesting today. So I'll skip that part. So political power, as opposed to governmental power, is, according to Constant, attributed to the individual citizen, the individual subject, which means that Constant detaches political power from any sort of collective subject. To put it bluntly, the people does not exist in Constant's understanding of politics. And it is precisely this aspect of decollectivization that appealed to contemporary anti-totalitarian thinkers, and it is still today very, very pervasive in democratic theory. The people, the collective, is not a real, tangible, material entity. The common ground in contemporary democratic theory is that the collective only exists as a symbolic representation. The people does not speak. There are only individuals that claim to speak on behalf of the people. As a consequence, the individual should not be sacrificed on behalf of the collective, as was supposedly so easily done in totalitarian regimes. But I'm slowly but certainly getting to my point, but political power is not attributed to all individuals. Constant only attributes political power to property owners. To be fair, the opposite would have been surprising. Limiting political participation in one way or the other to a particular minority was a very common practice in 19th century Western, both political systems, so in actual practice, and in political theory. So it is not so much the fact that Constant limits political power to property owners that is interesting, but why he does so. Constant argues that property, and only property, gives the citizen an interest in keeping the institutional system in place. Reading Constant's text, this limited view on political power is something that you would quite easily gloss over. So reading his text, it's not that he's constantly stressing the fact that political power should only be exercised by a minority. In the majority of instances, he simply speaks of citizens, and you really have to go look for the place where he defines who counts as citizens. So in the secondary literature, this is usually the limited political participation is usually considered to be a detail, something that is not important, and whether because it is explained completely by the historical context of his theorizing. And when it is considered to be important, it is assumed as an element of Constant's thinking that is at odds with democracy. And I have taken a different approach, because I actually think that this limited conception of political power is at the heart of Constant's theory of democracy and of political power. So, in fact, it is neither a detail nor is it, by definition, undemocratic. It is just the grounding of a particular theory of democracy and what political power means in a democracy. Okay, so why does Constant limit political power to property owners? I have already hinted at it before. Property gives individuals the interest to exercise political power. And the interest that makes one fit to exercise political power is not just any interest. It is particularly the interest to keep the political system in which one participates in place. So the limited conception of political power that that Constant advocates is not so much a system that is rooted in hereditary privilege. Constant does not, at least not in the later stages of his intellectual career, identify property with land ownership. It is not rooted in privilege. It is rooted in a form of competition. Constant does not want to limit the number of property owners as such. On the contrary, he is quite explicit in the fact that the more owners, the merrier. He wants, in principle, he would want to give everyone access to property in order to have a more stable government, because everyone who has property has an interest of keeping the governmental political system in place. So, property refers to a certain level of individual possessions, not necessarily land, but a threshold of wealth that serves as a precondition to have a stake in exercising political power. And Constant assumes that only the people who do not have a stake would want to change the political institutions so as to give them a stake. So you have to sort of acquire the stake elsewhere, and then you're allowed into the political system, because if we allow people that don't have the stake yet within the political system, they're going to change the political system. It follows that the exercise of political power is predicated for Constant upon the existing institutions. Political power for Constant is a way to use institutions, not to change them. So I found this to be a quite accurate description of liberal democracy. Liberal democracy is a political system that allows you to exercise political power if you have a stake to keep the system within which you use it or exercise it in place. It is not, as is often assumed about liberal democratic thinkers, an argument for depolitization. It is a call to exercise political power, actually. It allows conflict and disagreement to play out in the sphere of politics. What it is an argument for is for a specific form of politicization that happens within a particular institutional system. So it's not an argument against change, it is an argument in favor of change from within. It is not so much that changing within the political system is impossible. It is just predicated on the condition that the political system as such, the liberal democratic system, remains in place. So I think what I ended up with, my interpretation and my analysis of Constant, is also a very sort of... like liberal democracy is a sort of a dual concept, I also ended up with a sort of dual assessment of Constant's theory, because I do not agree with the fact that it is inherently undemocratic or that it is inherently an argument for depolitization. It is just that we need to understand that it is a particular form of politicization and that we should probably think of different ways of exercising political power. And that is why I'm so happy to be here and to learn about those possible alternatives.